Welcome to episode 135 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, we read Aquaman, The Trench by Jeff Johns. And now, the cast begins.
Another entrenched episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hello.
And Jen.
Hey.
And this week, we're doing the second half of our Waterworld arc, where we're facing off Namor and Aquaman. So we read Aquaman Volume 1, The Trench. This is the first six issues from the New 52 run that came out a year ago, 2 years ago? Something like
2011,
that.
December 2011.
Yeah. Yes, 2011. Written by Jeff Johns with art by, who was it? We looked this up before. Ivan Reis, I don't know how it's pronounced. Ivan, and, what was the other dude's name?
Joe Prado.
Joe Prado, that's right, Prado. Yeah, so, Aquaman, what did you guys think of this one?
So lovable.
Yeah. Way better than that Namor that we read.
Yeah.
It's not fair. It's really not fair.
Last week I felt like Namor was good because it was bad. This comic was straight up good because it was good. It was like a damn good comic. So I'm just going to lay that out there.
So I was pleasantly surprised by this comic.
Yeah.
And this is the first time I've read a solo Aquaman book. I've seen him we read him recently in the Grant Morrison Rock of Ages JLA storyline.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. And that's the angsty hook hand Aquaman, right? But and there's also I've also seen him in Justice League Unlimited, where he also is also the hook hand Aquaman, where his hook for some reason shoots out of his arm on a cable. Who knows where the cable is kept? But it's a cartoon, so who cares? Despite the fact that I've watched those episodes recently, and we recently read that version of Aquaman, my strongest impression of Aquaman is, before reading this, is just like the townspeople that he encounters. Because when I think of Aquaman, I think my mind goes to one of two places. Either the Robot Chicken DC special, where everyone else in the Justice League just rags on Aquaman all the time. Mm-hmm. Or the theme song of the Super Friends cartoon, because there's like they're doing like the roll call, and it's like, you know, like Superman flying and Batman doing his Batman thing, and then when it gets to Aquaman, it's him with his hand on his head doing the little choo 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 things where the like mind waves or whatever are coming out, and he's like summoning a whale.
Oh, yeah, like the dolphin noise coming out of his face.
His Aquaman sonar thing. And so, you know, because of that, I think I felt like when I was going into this comic, I didn't think it was going to be like that. I really like Jeff Johns as a writer, so I had high hopes for this comic because, you know, Aquaman's pretty cool looking in this. Ivan Reis made him look like a complete badass, even on the cover of issue number one. And so, like I said, I had high hopes, and I was pleasantly surprised at how good this comic was. And not just, I'm not saying it's good because it was better than I expected. It, like Jen said, it is a really good comic. But like I also said, going into this, I had the same kind of, like, misconceptions about Aquaman. And I think it was really cool that they addressed those in the way that they did in this comic by making the bystanders just talk about it out loud.
See, and I think that's not just cool. I think that's a genius move that Jeff Johns does. Because not only does it makes it so that you're not the only one as the reader. You're not the only one who has these thoughts. Like, okay, what does he do besides talk to fish? What use is it? You know, he puts that into the comic so that the characters in the universe think that about him too. And then you're able to get his character revealed through those interactions. Not just him showing that they're wrong or showing that he's more than this or showing that he's whatever, but the way that his character can endure that constant berating. Mm-hmm. That says so much about who Aquaman is, you know?
And, yeah, yeah, totally.
And I think in that opening scene, I know, Jen, I know that you like that opening scene where he, like, flips the random bank robber's truck.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in that opening scene, right away, you get the idea that this guy just has boundless confidence, you know? And you get it not only because of the way he stands in front of the truck, but in the way that they're all kind of ridiculing him. And he just doesn't care. He doesn't give two shits about it. He stabs the truck and he flips it over.
What's cool too about, like you said, Andy, it's totally a genius move, because what they could have done is gone the, like, gritty, hard-boiled way and just completely ignored those things about Aquaman and just made him, like, complete, like, Wolverine type of loner, air quotes, badass type of guy. And then I think if they had gone that way, I would have read this as kind of like, I would have thought of him in that way as a joke too.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, like you said, it was a genius way to address what everybody is thinking about Aquaman, even if it's just in the back of their mind.
Yeah.
And I think, just to add to that, a clever thing that Geoff Johns did here with character development is everyone is saying these things, and Aquaman is showing us the opposite repeatedly. And it's like you said, David, if he was a badass, we'd be like, well, they're just trying to rework his image and ignore who he was before. But by acknowledging, yeah, Aquaman is definitely a B-list hero, no one cares about him, it leaves a lot for the reader to say, hey, I thought all these things. And, you know, they're being fed to you, too. So, hey, maybe I thought this about him, too. And then he's disproving it, and you really want to see it unfold and understand how his character is going to develop contrary to what everybody's saying. It sets it up as something for the reader to discover.
See, and that showing them how, I think that's how this trick works. I mean, the trick is that the expectations are put in front of him, and then he flips them over, right? But I think what makes that entire concept work is that if you read this, there's not a lot of text boxes. There's almost none for Aquaman's internal monologue. You know, like, it never gets explained to the reader, oh, no, he doesn't talk to fish, he does this. Or, oh, no, this happens, not that. Or, oh, no, he's actually a badass. It's never told to you. I like that this is the epitome of show-don't-tell for character. And it's able to happen organically, because we're not the only ones who are saying it. We're not the ones who are thinking it. It's happening in the world that he walks in. He's getting ridiculed by people at his favorite restaurant, not just by us. And it makes it feel so organic, and it makes a whole concept of how his character's being pulled out through that chiding. It just makes it all work, sets it right off.
It's really clever, too, because instead of saying, you know, they're not saying everything you knew about Aquaman before is wrong. Because, like, clearly, I think if he maybe deserved the respect that Batman or Superman have, he might actually have it. But what we're discovering here is not so much that, you know, oh, Aquaman's actually secretly cool. It's that, hey, maybe he deserves more respect than you're giving him. Maybe there's more depth to his character than you thought before. So in no way does John say, reader, you're wrong for what you thought before. He's saying, reader, I invite you to come in and read this character and discover something that maybe you overlooked before.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I really like it when an author takes an established character that's who has all this canon and just says, you know, let's build on this, but not make it so overt. And I think that adds to the charm of this comic.
Yeah, and I think that building on an established character, that's kind of a weird pitfall with Aquaman, because, I mean, we're comparing him to Namor, right? And obvious, there's obvious reasons for that comparison, the King of Atlantis, all that kind of stuff. Except, I mean, when you think of Namor, you think of a character that has this established type, right? Namor is the strong, douchebaggy guy in the room. And, you know, when we read Namor Visionaries, that comic's, what, 25 years old now? I mean, he's that guy 25 years ago. He's that guy today. He was probably that guy when he was first written. He's always been that douchebaggy, you know, pretentious, looking down on everybody from his high horse guy. He's had that established character. But Aquaman has had so many different iterations. You know, hook hand, not hook hand. You know, hydrokinesis hand. What kind of hand does he have? And then is he bearded? Is he not bearded? Is it long hair, short hair? And that's just the physical difference in appearance. But like you said, David, there's an angsty one. There's an overly angry one. There's a bitter one. I mean, Aquaman's a guy who's had so many different character reboots that he's almost a blank slate, except people have this conception of him as being lame. And this guy overcomes that not by being angsty about it, not by getting angry about it. He gets over it by just having the balls to get over it, by just this boundless confidence. Like, I don't care what you're saying. I don't give two shits.
Yeah, he knows who he is, and so he doesn't worry about how other people view him. Like, he's not afraid to respond to those kinds of things. Like, I think it was in issue one, or maybe issue two, somebody says, "Don't you just talk to fish?" And he's like, "Well, you can't actually talk to fish because fish aren't intelligent enough."
Because they have the brain of the size of a peanut.
Yeah, he doesn't say something like, "No, dude, I don't talk to fish. That's stupid." He didn't, you know,
yeah.
Or punch him out or something. I feel like an angsty, angry, bitter one would have punched the guy or threatened him.
Jail you, Aquaman would do that.
Yeah, he just said, "No, here's why that's impossible." And then we see it later when he gets the angler fish to light the way when they're in the trench, and then the fish's fear overrides his mm-hmm. his mental push, right? So, yeah, I mean, as we've been saying, all these things do a great job of showing the character that Aquaman is. And it's not heavy-handed. It's just things that come up as the action progresses.
And I like the way that character interaction that he has with the other people in the DCU, with the townspeople of, what's that crappy little town by the water? I don't know. But through that interaction, we get, organically, character grows out of that. Not just for Aquaman and the townsfolk, which have their own kind of personality to them, but we get, like, when you first see Aquaman have that scene with the truck, and he just has his balls-out confidence, right? And it's like, yeah, I could see Superman not caring. I could see Batman kind of caring a little bit. Wally would take it personally, but there's a lot of guys. Oh, my God, Booster Gold would be destroyed, you know? This guy has the confidence level of a Batman or a Superman. Like, where does that come from, you know? And then later on, we see where that part of his character comes from. It comes from Mira. Mira? I don't know. I'm going to say Mira.
I think of her as Mira.
Yeah,
same.
Mira. We'll go Mira. Because I think it's one of the early scenes that you see with her when they're walking among the people. She says, "They should be bowing to you. You're a king of Atlantis," you know? And, like, the way that she props him up, that's when you see those scenes, it clicks. Like, oh, no wonder he doesn't have to give a crap. Like, this is a queen. He's the ruler of Atlantis, and she's going to remind him, and they're just up here because they want to be. And the second they stop wanting to be there, they can fucking leave. You know? Like, that constant reminder that she is for him is where so much of that confidence comes from. And that dynamic between the two just grows off of Aquaman's character as you read the comic so naturally. It's great.
Yeah, and we were kind of going over our notes earlier this week, and I think at this point, you know, we've all established, like, we find this version of Aquaman to be a pretty believable guy. But I was thinking maybe before we went forward with that, we could, like, talk about when it hit us that he was so, you know, that he was a real character and not just some caricature.
Oh, like the moment that you buy in, that you actually do like this guy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what was it for you, David?
It was almost immediately, like, the scene with the, I'll just say it was issue one, because I think issue one does a really, really good job of establishing Aquaman. We get to see him in action, and how he deals with bad guys in the armored cars part, and we get to see... So we get to see Aquaman in action, how he is in a fighting type situation. He doesn't really fight, but, you know, he we get to see that he's super strong. He doesn't fly, right? He just can, like, jump really well.
Yeah, he jumps like. Really strong, basically.
And he is pretty tough, but he's not completely invulnerable because he gets a little scratch on his cheek from the bullet.
Yeah.
But the thing that did the most for me was the part where he goes to the restaurant and we get the little flashbacks of him with his dad, because we get to see the person that Aquaman is in private, because it's kind of, even though he's in the restaurant with people, it's kind of a private moment for him when he's in the booth remembering his father. But we also get his origin story too, in a way that is kind of organic, unlike what it was in Namor Visionaries.
Oh god,
where Namor wakes up from his, like, being unconscious, and the guy on the boat, the marine biologist, tells Namor his own origin story. I was like, come on, really?
And I like how in Namor he even starts off the sentence with, I know you already know this, and then just talks at him for three pages about his own birth.
Yeah, and it was, so not only did issue one really tell me everything I needed to know about who Aquaman is, where he is personally, like, in his mind, and but also how he is perceived by the outside world. But it wasn't so heavy-handed and kind of, like, we didn't get beat over the head with it. But there's also room, you know, just enough. There is still plenty of room for you to learn about this character, mm-hmm. see him grow, because even though he's not actively trying to change the misconceptions of the people around him, it seems like that's kind of where it will go, not because Aquaman wants it or because the bystanders want it. It's just as Aquaman grows into his own as a superhero, we'll see all these things change, right?
Yeah, and the townsfolk are just ignorant. They just don't know.
Yeah,
you know, they don't even like believe necessarily that Atlantis even exists.
Yeah, none of them are. Nobody's malicious about it, and I feel like that. It's really important that's not the case. Like you said, everyone's just ignorant. They don't know. They don't know anything about Aquaman. He's a fish guy. That's all they know. And he's got a cool trident.
Yeah.
And an orange shirt.
Yeah. No, it's armor. Okay, it's scale armor.
It's scale armor.
Chainmail.
See, for me, it was that scene in the restaurant, but it was more for me that little exchange where he tries to order fish and chips, and everybody, like, gasps. You can feel the room freeze. Like, everybody's shocked. It's like, I don't know, it's like a cow going to a hamburger restaurant, like Five Guys or something, you know? It's like, what? Except he's not a fish. He just is from underwater because the town that he's from thousands of years ago sank and they evolved to be underwater living people.
Yeah. Like,
it has nothing to do. There's no fish thing. He's human. There's no fish in him. But
not to mention that fish eat other fish.
Yes, exactly. And I think he said something along those lines too or something. Or things that somebody says, I don't know. But it's just like, it's like that scene, it shows you the misconception that people have about him. I mean, there's the misconception of his power set and all of this, that, and what he can do and where he's from. I mean, those are all kind of factual misconceptions. But up until this point, I mean, we talked about the different characters that Aquaman has been before. But sort of a running theme throughout his existence was that he was the environmental superhero. He was like the Captain Planet of the DC universe, right?
Yeah.
Oh, there's an oil spill. Where's Aquaman? That's the only time you're ever really going to see him. You know
what's funny? We got that with Namor.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And we didn't talk about it last week, I think, because we were all just expecting it. We were expecting an oil spill or some underwater disaster, and none of that happens here. The problem that comes up out of the water. You know, it has nothing to do with the humans polluting this, that, the other thing. But that's the misconception people have. And by having him walk into a seafood restaurant and eat fish and chips, he's like, I don't give a shit that there's fish down there. You know, like, I care if my kingdom gets, you know, depth charges dropped on it or some shit. Like, that matters. But whatever, oil spills happen. It sucks. You know, but, like, that scene of him being in there and then that little moment, I think it's just, like, there's a page full of, like, five or six panels of him just sitting in that booth, except there's one panel that stretches all the way across the page that's him flashing back in that booth in that moment to him and his father being there. And there's no words in it. There's no words around it. It's not mentioned. It's just sitting in that booth. You get that flash of the image that what being there means to him. Or not even means to him, just why this restaurant? Why a seafood restaurant? Why this town? Why any of being here? That's the first little glimpse you get. Oh, he was here with his father before. Oh, okay. Like that little glimpse. I'm like, all right, I want to know more. Tell me more, Jeff. What about you, Jen?
I'm going to go back to the much noted truck scene at the beginning. I love that scene so much. And it's a scene where Aquaman like leaps out of the ocean and descends on some bank robbers in a truck, and they see him and they just start laughing at him. Yeah. And then the cops see him and they're like, what's he doing here? He's going to mess it up. And they start laughing at him. And the way they reacted and then he reacted just set up the whole comic for me, where it's like we see the derision and his lack of the lack of respect that people have for him. At the same time, that moment establishes he's not a hero. He's not an emo Aquaman. Like, he doesn't get really mad at them. He's not a putz. He's like, well, I was just trying to help. And he actually did stop the robbery.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's also kind of a level-headed guy who just is trying to do what he thinks is right and doesn't really worry too much about other people's perceptions. He's not in it for the glory. Because, you know, when they're like, well, what are you doing? He just kind of sighs and goes, okay, well, I helped out, so I'm going to leave now. Bye. And he just goes away and gets lunch. And, you know, he could have reacted in so many different ways to that situation, but he handled it beautifully. And to me, that kind of revealed the plan that Geoff Johns had for him. Like, this is who Aquaman is going to be in this run. And I enjoyed that. He seemed like a real person who's just trying to do right by the world.
Okay, one more scene.
Okay.
Because I couldn't quite decide, and as we're talking, I'm like, I need to talk about this, right? Okay. As he's walking around, everybody calls him Aquaman, and then he's walking around with Mira, and everybody goes, oh, is this Aquawoman? He says, no, her name is Mira, you know? And then later on, she's out walking around on her own to get dog food, which turns out wonderfully well for everyone involved. But as she's out walking around, people call her Aquawoman, and she says, no, 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 my name is Mira, although I think my husband, like, is more upset by it. I don't remember what words she said, but he minds it more than I do, right? She says that. This is the woman that we see go apeshit, you know? Just for, like, a series of small misunderstandings, she goes fucking crazy, breaks a guy's arm, breaks out of police custody, like, for a series of misunderstandings. That's what happens. And she says, no, no, he minds it more than I do. And all he ever does when that happens is sigh. And then the culmination of that, I feel, is when the cop shows up at the end of the Trench series with the dog and drops the dog off, right? And Aquaman looks at the dog and says, what's his name? And the deputy says, I don't know, Aquadog? And all he does is just shrug and sigh and say, whatever. You know, like, I love that. Just that it shows you over and over and over that that's what he's going to do. Just kind of let it wash over him.
Yeah.
Wash over him? Huh?
I get it. Well, see what you did there.
You made a pun about water.
So what about, okay, we talked about, I mean, this is such a character-driven story, even though there's action all over it. I mean, we obviously all love Aquaman. How do you guys feel about Mira?
She's awesome, too.
She's so cool. I think she plays a really good foil to Aquaman because, you know, she's very confident and calm, except when she decides to not be calm. And then the whole time he has to kind of have a bit more restraint because of her to, you know, balance her out. So, and it's clear she relies on him for this a little bit too. She calls him up and she's like, yeah, I kind of had trouble with the authorities and we should talk about this. Yeah. And so it seems like he kind of guides her on that, but she also offers emotional support. So she is certainly by no means a woman in a refrigerator here. You can tell already she is her own character. And that's shown, too, in that she's not just a female version of the same hero. She has a name, and it's not Aquawoman, it's Mira. Her powers are different. She doesn't psychically control sea creatures. Mm-hmm. She controls water. Like, it's established very early in that she is an individual with a personality who is not just a reflection of the hero. She's actually his partner in a lot of ways. Like, she supports him in fights. She supports him emotionally. She is a very full character, and I just love that about her because she's a person. And sometimes, as sad as it is to say, and in fact more than sometimes, women in comics aren't people. They're just, like,
placeholders.
Yeah, they're tropes or caricatures or placeholders, you know, and she's cool. She's just so cool.
Yeah, I really engaged with her when we were getting the origin story for her, because it brings up her father, right? And he has father issues, and I'm like, okay, it makes sense that they would both have father issues. And I was just expecting, you know, this is the DC universe. As soon as the father gets mentioned, I'm like, all right, going to be another orphan. Aquaman's an orphan, Batman's an orphan, Superman, everybody in DC has the parents get killed, right? Except then as we get into it, it's not just that normal, like, everybody's an orphan story that you get in the DC universe. She was raised to fight by her father. She believed in what her father believed in. And then going and meeting Aquaman is what changed her. And she went back and tried to change his mind. And he said, no, that man, Aquaman, is a traitor, an enemy of this empire. And if you side with him, that makes you a traitor. And you deserve the same fate that he does. You know, and unfortunately, we can't see the father's face, so we don't know what his emotional sense is behind this. But I like that it's not simple for her, because it could so easily be simple. This is Aquaman's book. Why does Mira have to have an engaging origin story like that? But I love that idea of them being separated by the idea of him being king and the idea of state. Like, that feels less comic book and more Greek tragedy. I mean, that straight up is Antigone, right? Like, oh, you're my daughter, but you're siding with the bad guy, and you don't believe in, oh, well, it's against the law, so I guess that makes you a traitor. You're going to have to die, you know? Like, whoops. That's so much more complex, and I like that we have resolution. We know where it ends up a little bit, you know? Aquaman is king of Atlantis. Mira is alive. Who knows about the father? I don't know what ended up with him, but there is some resolution for it, and I'm really interested to see how that played out in her past and how that's going to connect with where we are today.
I think there's also a plot trope around the, you know, woman who is actually sent to kill the hero, where she is, you know, close to him and then she inevitably betrays him. And I don't think that's going to happen here. Just the way that it was laid out, I would be very surprised if there was some major betrayal or if she suddenly went back on these beliefs that she's so clearly shown to have. And I think that's a testament to how strong her character comes across in so few panels. You know, you see this little scene of what happened and why she's here, and it tells, you know, loads about her. So I can't stop, like, gushing, being like, oh, this comic's so good.
Well, let's talk about some of the actual things that happened in this comic, because we've done a lot of talking about character, which I think is perfectly fine, because that's definitely the strength of this comic, which is awesome, because that's what makes a good story, is a good character. But, like, what did you guys think of the trench monster things as an enemy? Especially as a first enemy for a comic. I mean, this is the new 52, this is a new hero, a new character, and this is the first person that you're going to test that metal against.
So, I actually have some thoughts on that, because I liked the trench people thing. On the other hand, I think that it's something we've seen a lot in the new 52, and I don't mean trench monsters, but I'll get into that. So, it's really nice how it starts, because the first issue, nothing actually happens until the last page of issue number one, where we see the trench people coming up for food and, like, actually committing some violence, I think. And suddenly we're faced with, like, oh no, there's something coming out of the deep. And it's, as you said earlier, it's not Aquaman defending the ocean, it's Aquaman defending the land from the ocean, which is a nice little twist. But I think it was really nice how it was used to explore, like, a dying race. It's kind of this parallel to Atlantis. And then it gives us this opportunity to see an old Atlantean ship. So we see a bigger plot worked in there. This was kind of the little breadcrumb that we get, but it's still tied in. It's not irrelevant. The thing is, we see this exact plot structure happen in a bunch of other New 52 comics. We get it in Batman, Batgirl, Batwoman, All-Star Western, Green Lantern, just to, like, name a few. And it's not bad, but it's, you could kind of see if you pick them all up when they released in, I think, late 2011, early 2012, this editorial hand coming in there and being like, okay, this is kind of how we want to structure things. And it's a very, like, you know, small mystery leading to greater mystery, little bits that are resolved in nice little packages. But I like it, and I think it's a good turn for DC to take. I think that, you know, I haven't read farther into New 52, really, except for Batman Court of Owls. And if this sort of thing keeps up, I think that would lead to success, or at least I hope so.
What about you, David? What did you think of, well, maybe not just the Trench People, maybe some of the other stuff in here, the other plot bits?
I thought the Trench Monsters were a good villain, because I feel like if they were to introduce an arch enemy right now, like maybe Black Manta, for example, it would take away from Aquaman's introduction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this trade is 6 issues and it's called The Trench, but The Trench is actually only issues 1 to 4.
Yeah.
And 5 and 6 are kind of like more background on Aquaman and Mira and their relationship. And I think that by using a kind of generic villain, you know, it let us focus on Aquaman as a character, getting to know him, because, you know, if you're gonna create an ongoing series, you want to kind of set the tone early, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And if you say, like I said, if you use Black Manta or somebody, and he, you know, like, who is this guy? Why does he hate Aquaman? Is he from Atlantis? You have all these other questions, and then
also Aquaman can't win,
right? Because
or can't kill him or utterly defeat him,
right? Because you need him to come back, because he's the arch villain, right? So, you know, I think it, by maybe not the Trench People in the Trench Monsters specifically, but a generic type of monster was a good choice. And what was cool, too, is they, instead of making it like a one-and-done kind of thing, they tied them into the overall story of Aquaman. Because, you know, it turns out that they're living inside an Atlantean vehicle of some type. There's Atlantean technology in there, but it's really old. And so it's like, oh, now there's this, it's leading us into this bigger story. So it served a lot of... It served the story and the story in these 4 issues and the overall story of Aquaman in a really good way. So I thought it was a good choice.
Yeah. For all of those reasons, I agree with you guys. But the resolution of the Trench People left a sour taste in my mouth. And I don't think it's necessarily the comic book's fault so much as it is my fault for watching so much Star Trek lately. I feel like the resolution was really simple. I'm going to commit genocide of this species. I'm going to try and kill every last one of them because they're dangerous. And in the end, it's just going to get written off handily by Mira just saying, there's nothing else you could have done. There's just nothing you could have done. And I think it's partially me for, I mean, I've been on a serious Star Trek kick the last, like, year, probably.
Have you seen many Borg episodes recently, Andy?
Not yet. But, I mean, there are... I mean, okay, I'm going to get a little bit tricky here, but the first time the Enterprise encounters the crystalline entity, that thing has already killed millions of people, is on its way to kill millions of more people, and wants to kill you, right? And still, with all of that, they look at this thing and see it must serve some function, some purpose in this world, this galaxy, right? And to kill it would remove that function. And we don't know all of what's going on here, you know? It's kind of like, well, Galactus has killed millions of people. Why don't we kill Galactus? Well, no, he serves some kind of purpose here, you know? And looking at these trench people, especially later when we see that the Atlantean ship who had crashed there got overrun by these creatures, that means they've been there thousands of years. Thousands of years these fish have been there. And this is the first time they've come up to the surface. There's something else going on down there, something else wrong with them. And rather than try and figure it out, rather than have any kind of moral dilemma in there, it's just written off handily and easily. Well, there's nothing you could have done. They had to be beaten. They had to be defeated. It's like, yes, but I kind of feel like I should expect more of my hero.
But I think it also sets it up as then he has to expect more of himself and then feels bad about his failure and has to reconcile that. And we see that he's a little more human for it, I think.
And I think this is how Mira helps him, because I think she's a much more severe character. She's a lot more savage than he is. She'll look at it and be like, it was us versus them, and they lost. So, sucks for them. Don't care if it was genocide. You know, which, there is a certain truth in that. But there's just, like I said, it might not even be the comic. It's probably just me, but I had a little bit of disappointment when I read that. But I did like that it tied in so handily to the Atlantis stuff. With that, like, recording that got played out with, like, a statue of water. That was fucking sick.
Yeah.
And how they're, like, it reminded me of that scene in Lord of the Rings when they're in Moria. God, I'm, like, bringing all kinds of references. And Gandalf's reading from the book, "We can't get out, we can't get out, they're at the gates, we can't get out." It reminded me of that, that guy just standing there. Or in Serenity, the recording for that, too.
Oh, yeah.
That was almost the same thing, huh?
Wow. They're coming. Oh, now I'm like seeing all these connections. I'm like, I wonder if those were purposeful cultural references at all, or if it was just happenstance.
I think it's probably it's a trope by now. It has to be a trope by now.
I'm okay with that.
But I like how in the course of resolving these plots, right, we see Aquaman and Mira change a little bit. But I like that as they're getting resolved, we see less them changing and more the perception of them by the townspeople or by the universe in general that's being portrayed in this comic. Like, not just the introduction of the dog, but we see more and more niceties and less, "What the fuck are you doing here, bro?" You know?
Yeah.
Like, my favorite is that woman, I cannot remember her name, who brings the dog food back to Mira.
Jennifer,
yes. I love that character. Because I think that's a character that wouldn't have existed in issue 1, but can exist in issue 5 or 6. But can exist there. And I think that growth happens really quickly, but if you're doing things, you save a town, that's what you'll get for it. You get the love of that town. Happens slow, but it does. I like that. I like that little build-up. Well, I only have one thing I want to bring up before we talk about the art, then. And it's this thing that's said more than once in these first 6 issues. It's the phrase, "fish out of water." Like, they call him a fish out of water. They say, "Oh, aren't you in the wrong place?" And this is like the classic Geoff Johns trick. To take something that's a joke, that's kind of funny, makes sense, is a little chiding, reveals character, and at the same time, is the definition of the underlying theme of this comic. You know, like, he's not just, I mean, yes, he's a fish out of water, literally speaking, but this role that he's playing as just another person is entirely different from the role that he's played before. The things that he's doing are entirely different from the things that he's doing. His life is all about adjusting through this new existence on land. I mean, I knew he grew up there, and it's definitely more true for Mira, but where he is now is so much different from where he was as a kid, and that sense of acceptance everybody, that ridicule that people have for him sets him apart in a way that makes him a fish out of water, even if he were just a normal human, to get that sort of ridicule from them. And so this is just such a great Geoff Johns trick. It's something I've seen him do before, and I really do like that he does it. It's a little bit like, oh, Geoff, you and your overt themes. I should have seen this coming. Should have expected it, like that kind of thing. But it's good. It works really well here. That sort of recurring joke.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. So let's talk about that art.
I kind of had mixed feelings about it, because on the one hand, it was well done. You know, like, I didn't see anything that I found off-putting. And I thought that the panels flowed well. Facial expressions were good. On the other hand, it just felt very, I don't know how to say this, but like contemporary. Like, it kind of felt like everything else that was coming out for New 52. I didn't see a big differentiator between this and some of the other comics that are coming out right now and, you know, and in 2012, 2011. So I guess I almost feel like the art and writing didn't match, in that the writing stood out quite a bit, but the art, while nice and complimentary to the writing, I think if it was just given without the text, it wouldn't stand out on its own, and that disappointed me, because I think the writing raised my standards for this trade as a whole.
Yeah, you know, you say that not anything weird stood out, but there were a couple times that Mira was on the panel and her face looked wildly different from the way it did an issue ago. You know, and it's just like, oh, hey, look, I didn't know that she had a horse face. Let me flip back to the last one. Oh, she didn't have a horse face. She just does now for no reason. And it's just, there's a couple little inconsistencies that do make you do that. But, you know, I hadn't thought about it, but you're entirely right about the New 52 kind of having this homogenized look. And I think it comes from the fact that they have Jim Lee, who's a great influential comic book artist, as their sort of creative art director. You know, he did the costume design for every single one of these New 52 characters. So they're all going to look like Jim Lee creations, because they all are Jim Lee creations. You know, and we talked about it too, a story. I mean, there's a reason all of these are going to feel like they have the same kind of, like, small goal achieved, overlying mystery plot structure that signature of Geoff Johns comics, because, hey, look, Geoff Johns is the creative writing director for the company, you know? And so there is a kind of homogenized feel to the New 52. But all of that said, I think that the best looking thing in this comic is Aquaman. And I think that he looks good and looks like Aquaman in all the right ways. He looks like a beach kid, right? He looks like he was raised on a beach with his blonde hair and blue eyes and everything. But it's not the blonde hair, blue eyed like Aryan thing, you know? It's like blonde hair, blue eyed, hey man, like that kind of thing. The gold scale mail armor and that fucking sick trident. Yeah, that guy's a king somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's a little out of place up here, but if you look at it, that the design on that trident's pretty friggin' awesome. And I love that he carries it around everywhere, because fuck you, I'm the king of Atlantis. Those things, everything about the way Aquaman is drawn, for me, works great. And it needs to be, because that's what this comic book is about. Not just because he's the titular character, but because this is a character comic book. And so that character needs to look good. So there's so much action in these comics. I know we spent a lot of time talking about character and how the first one's almost all character, but once the trench people kind of come up, it's like straight action for three issues. How did you guys feel about the flow of action in this? Did it feel natural for you, the movement?
Yeah, I thought the pacing was pretty good. And
would you say it was fluid?
No.
No, I wasn't even thinking that at all.
Damn. Okay. Damn. Sorry.
Did you just make another pun with the word damn?
Maybe.
It's terrible.
Sorry, I'll stop trying. At this point, I'm just floundering around grabbing it.
No.
Oh my god.
It's like you rehearsed this.
No, I didn't.
Do you have like a secret pun notes?
No. Somewhere? They're at the bottom of this glass of whiskey is where they are.
Would you like to get some more out of you, Andy?
No, I'm good. I'm good.
Okay, as long as you're sure that you're
good. I'm good. Go ahead.
So anyways, I don't even remember what I was going to say.
You're talking about the fluid action.
The pacing flowed well. How's that?
Sure.
No, I felt like I talked about this earlier, how I felt like the first issue really set the tone and established the character. And we, like Jen said, we didn't get nothing happened until really the last panel, at least as far as moving forward the trench story. And once we got into that story, it flowed really well, and it didn't feel rushed, or it didn't feel like things were jammed in there. So, yeah, I thought the action was really good.
Good.
Yeah, I don't know what is it.
Well, I mean, is there? I think it's interesting that these scenes stick out for us, and we attribute it to the writing. But I mean, for me, I mentioned that scene in the restaurant before, right? And I think the reason that stuck out to me so much was especially that panel that shows him there with his father with no text on it. And I know it's a writing direction, but that panel, the art style is so different. I think it's actually watercolor. And it's not a pun. I do think it looks like watercolor.
Yeah, it looks like...
like this washed out, kind of nostalgic, I don't know, something.
It reminded me of... Oh, what's his name? Is it Alex Ross?
Yes.
Yeah, I immediately was...
Alex Ross or Bob Ross?
Bob Ross is the Happy Tree guy.
Yeah.
Wait, who's the guy who did the cover for...
Alex Ross, yes.
Okay. See, now you're just confusing me.
I'm sorry.
I don't know what's happening.
Because they're related.
Are they really related?
I don't know. We can start a rumor right now, though. I'm fine with it.
Okay, let's do that.
I somehow don't think they're related.
They're distant cousins or whatever. But yeah, that scene sticks out to me not just because of the writing. I think it's because of that separate panel and the way that the flashbacks are drawn. That it's striking on the page. It feels perfect when you read it, when you see it. That, I think, is when this art really, really works well with the writing, is when those little moments come up. Anyway, that's just my opinion. You know, whatever.
Oh, I actually wanted to point one thing out that I noticed as I'm going through these issues again. There's a scene... there's a panel right after Mira breaks the guy's arm.
Mm-hmm.
There's a guy in the next panel who says, "What happened?" And he's wearing a Green Lantern t-shirt.
Really?
Yeah.
I gotta go back and like look at that now.
Well, that makes sense. Green Lantern is one of the comics that didn't have its continuity changed with the New 52. So that means they've been around for a while, the Green Lantern.
There's another kid with a Green Lantern shirt, like two pages afterwards, who's running out of the grocery store. Okay. It's probably because it's Jeff Johns. He's like, "Hey, advertise for my other comic."
Yes, advertise for the thing that I really like doing.
Sorry. Okay, let's rate it.
All right, David, then you can go first. Boom, did that to you.
I feel like I'm gonna rate this wrong, and you guys are going to do a better job than me.
Nope.
I'm going to give this...
I promise I will screw mine up.
Okay. I'm going to give this a 3.5. I liked it a lot, and I'm curious about where this is going to lead, but I'm not going to run out and buy more issues. So take that for what you will. But like we talked about, I thought that the comic overall was good. It was definitely better than average, and I thought it was, having no point of reference or basis for comparison, I will say that this is probably a good place to start Aquaman, if you're curious. But I mean, that was the whole point of the New 52 stuff, right? It was to get a new jumping off point. And I think that this comic succeeded in that regard. I hadn't read any Aquaman, except for a few times when he appeared in Justice League. I'd seen him in the in various cartoons. I forgot to mention the Batman Brave and the Bold comic, cartoon,
yeah,
where Aquaman sings a song in one episode. Look it up on YouTube. It's hilarious. But, I have a completely different opinion about Aquaman now because of this comic. And And Geoff Johns did a really good job of making him a very interesting, sympathetic character, who definitely... And Ivan Rice and what's his name? James Prado?
Yeah.
Did an excellent job of making him look like a complete badass. And being noble and regal at the same time. So this comic overall is really... It's good. I don't really have anything negative to say about it. So 3.5 is a good rating. I mean, I don't... There's nothing wrong with that, right?
No, no, nothing wrong at all. I mean, if, you know, you want to be wrong.
Maybe I do.
Just to play into your insecurity.
Thanks, Andy. Now I'm never going to be able to rate something ever again.
What about you, Jen?
I'm going to give this a 4, because I thought it was really enjoyable, and I had never read Aquaman before, so this was a good introduction to the character. And I mean, I know, like, of course they have to introduce the character well, because it's a big reboot, but it was engaging, and I want to read more. And I think that's a really good sign, because we...
Yeah.
So, I will say, I don't know if the title will be able to keep up this level of character engagement, just because I feel like a lot was given to us in the first 4 issues in terms of, like, development. And after Aquaman's developed, like, what are they going to do with him to keep him interesting, to develop him further? And I mean, I'm sure there's, like, a good year of stuff to do, but after that, you know, how is it going to happen? Not that it can't, but I'm just really hoping that it will continue to be this good. But I enjoyed it, so yeah, 4.
All right. So I'm going to let the secret out of the bag. For a long time, I have been a big Aquaman fan. I think he has the potential to be one of the coolest, strongest, most badass characters in the DC universe. And I think that his origin... his existence is who he is, King of Atlantis, living on the mainland, all these kinds of things. I think it's a ripe ground for incredibly good stories. And I've thought it for a long, long time. And I've always said the problem is that he's always written really bad. He's written with anger problems, with angst problems, with problems that he shouldn't have if he's a King of Atlantis. These are problems that should not occur to him. And I think it's sad to say, but this is the best I've ever read of an Aquaman title. And I have read quite a few Aquaman titles. This is the best I've ever read. And aside from that, of the new 52 that I've actually read, I've read the Batwoman, the Batman, I've read a couple of them, I don't even recall them all. I haven't read the Wonder Woman, I hear that one's amazing. But of the new 52, this is the one that I've enjoyed the most. And so I think with those two things in mind, this is, if you want to read an Aquaman title about Aquaman, this is the one I'm going to hand you first. Having read all kinds of shitty, shitty Aquaman, this is the one I'm going to hand you. There's a lot of good animated stuff out there for Aquaman. There's some really good portrayals, like the Justice League Unlimited, where you see how he loses his hand and gets the hook. That's a good episode. It shows him being heroic, and some of the stuff with him and his son and Mira are very good. But even then, I think this is as good as all of those, if not better. That in mind, and in mind that of the New 52, it's really good. I have to give this a 4.5. And maybe I'm screwing up, and it should be a 4, but I don't remember what I gave the new 52 Batman, but I do like this better. I think it's more fun. I think it's less doom and gloom and grit that doesn't need to be there. It's just a more fun comic that is still really engaging and has really interesting character stuff and a lot of potential for development of the storylines of these people. So yeah, 4.5. Just going to put it out there.
Cool.
All right. So I'm pretty sure we can unanimously say that with our Waterworld arc over Aquaman 1.
Yeah.
Definitely this is better than the Namor stuff.
Yeah. I like Namor. He just isn't... I don't like him. I didn't like this... I didn't like the issues we read. I've read a lot more Namor than Aquaman. But... except for the John Byrne Namor Visionaries that we read, it was all when he was in a book with other characters. And I think he plays off well against others. Especially other well-known characters.
Yeah, and we can have a resolution in that, the same way that we had Thanos versus Darkseid. We were able to say, you know, Darkseid's better as a one-on-one villain, whereas Thanos is better as part of a bigger plot, you know? I think we can say, like, Namor is really good on a team. Like, the dynamics that he could bring out in a team are a lot more interesting than maybe this Aquaman can. This Aquaman would just stand in the corner being a badass and not giving two shits about what anybody said, you know? There's not a whole lot of inter-character dynamic going on there. But for a solo book, I think this Aquaman could carry a book a lot better than that Namor could.
Definitely. No doubt in my mind about that.
Word. So next week, we're going to start a Teen Titans arc because the Teen Titans expansion of HeroClix dropped this week. And that's all the reason that's all the reason we need. So next week, we're going to start off with some old stuff. Judas Contract from 1988. This is from the new Teen Titans series written by Marv Wolfman and drawn by George Perez. It collects issues 39 to 44 and annual number 3. After that, we're going to read the new 52 Teen Titans. The trade is called It's Our Right to Fight. It's written by Scott Lobdell with art by Brett Booth and our boy Norm Rapmund.
Yeah, Norm Rapmund. Signed my comics before.
Norm is a cool guy, I will say.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. If you get a chance to meet him at a con, he's very approachable, very nice guy.
Yeah. And so this is, like I said, New 52, so it's from 2011. It's issues 1 to 7, if you want to go ahead and grab the singles. And then we're going to wrap up with some animated stuff, because in case you didn't know, we talk about a lot about the JLU and the Superman and the Batman show, but the Teen Titans show, while targeted for a slightly younger audience, was also really, really good. Mm-hmm. I mean, DC's been knocking their animated universe out of the park for a while, and this is definitely in that vein. So we're going to read, it's a three-parter called The End. It's the last three episodes of Season 4. And you can get these. I don't think they're streaming anywhere. They're not like on Hulu or Netflix, I don't think. But you can buy them for, I think, $2 a pop on Amazon Instant Video. And we will, of course, put a link to that up on our website, which is www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com. And not just for the Amazon stuff. We'll have links there for the trade to Teen Titans It's Alright to Fight and for the Judas Contract. All of those will be up there. And if we're not reading the best Teen Titans stuff, which we probably aren't because they are like a well-established team from a long history, it's because we couldn't find a good thing. But email us and let us know what the best Teen Titans story is. What's our email address again?
That would be atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
And if you have a good idea on what we should do after Teen Titans, I think we should do another like Marvel series. We haven't done. I feel like we haven't read some Marvel in a while, some good Marvel. So send us a recommendation, post it on our wall on Facebook, facebook.com/APSupercast, or go ahead and tweet it at us, which is twitter.com/APSupercast. That's the little @SomeAPSupercast. You know that. Whatever. Your social media is there. It's cool. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Yeah. All right. Until next week, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye. We'll be right back.